And the work is in collaboration with Nash Narutaka and Eric here, and also people, Yanbei and Baoyi and other people in Yanbei's group at Caltech. And the contain will just start with the echo in the linear perturbation theory, and I will actually escape the introduction and motivation because there's like everyone has talked this a lot, and also people sitting here I think know pretty well. So I would maybe introduce like some like few introduction when I like discuss the specific model, but I will just start with the how we get echo from linear perturbation theory and how we think why we need numerical relativity and or some nonlinear effect to come into play. And for this nonlinear part, I will introduce three methods we are now trying to use. One is the hyper method, and another is the effective one-body formalism, and then is the Einstein toolkit. And I will have some outlook about what we're currently doing and what we're trying to do in the future. So let's start with the linear perturbation theory. And in the linear perturbation theory, we can calculate the quasi-null modes for this quantum black holes. And basically the picture for calculating the quasi-null modes is using the geometrically optical approximation method. And the basic idea is in the picture here. So this one is the standard black hole, and this one is the quantum black holes. And for the standard black holes, the initial condition we use for this linear perturbation theory is like a scaling problem. So we have either wave from inside or wave from outside, and we call it Kosmo-made initial wave packet. And once this wave hits the angular momentum bearing, part of it will reflect it back. And once it hits horizon for a standard black hole, just going to the black hole. And for others reflected by the angular momentum bearing, it will produce the LIGO effect they detect as the mean signal. And if we, instead of the horizon, we put the warp Planck length away from the horizon, then that's how echo comes. So once it hits the warp, part of it will reflect it back and hit the bearing, produce first echo, and the bearing can reflect the other part and then produce second echo and third echo. And if we just simply take this geometrically approximation picture, then we can write the take the wave from inside as a example, so which we consider this initial condition rather than outside, but all the picture will look the same. So if we we've come from inside, then we can write the mean effect as the outgoing over ingoing as the first effect is the transmission of the black hole. And then this n equal to 1 is basically when we reflect it from here, which get a black hole reflection of the black hole here, and then hit the wall, which get n equal to 1 wall, and then hit this again, get the transmission of black hole. And this basically donates the phase, which transfer from here to here. So so we get n equal to 1 are the first echo, and 2 is second echo, and then going forward. And then if we sum over these quantities, which are actually echoes, and then we can get this expression for all the echo adding together. And basically quasi-null modes is defined as the solution for pure outgoing at infinity, which means this one will go to infinity because we only have outgoing here. So here is 0, so it will go to infinity. So which is this pole equal to 0. And then by this, we can solve these quasi-normal modes. And this, I apply the Boltzmann reflective introduced by the Narutaka in this morning. And by doing so, we can, from the linear perturbation theory of this one, we can we can calculate the quartz normals. The same quartz normals can be calculated using the asymptotic matching method, which Mango and Cardoso, they introduced for their case, but it's also applied our Boltzmann reflectivity. It also gets this quartz normals. And we can use this formula to calculate the numerical real-time echoes. Basically, this formula is what I showed before. It's just this one here. But right now, I include both this one and outside one, so there's two. There's like two different initial conditions, so I have two different m, and for different we can calculate different echoes, and here is show the numerical echo from this expression, and this is the string real time of the string, and this is the time real time, and basically as I said, there's two initial conditions, one from inside and another from outside, and you can see it actually produced the exactly same LIGO event. I use the biggest 1GW0715091414. And here is we can see the echoes here, and this orange curve is the initial condition from inside, and blue curve is the initial condition from outside. And the problem actually for the linear perturbation theory is we don't know which one is the true initial condition because before here we just picture a single black hole, which is the single final black hole, but before here is actually two black holes inspire with each other and merger, so they are actually not predicted by linear perturbation theory. That's basically why we are trying to introduce the numerical relativity come into play. So real initial conditions are no linear, rather not the front incoming one or from the outside one. And a little bit more about the linear perturbation is we also calculate the analytical results for our model, which we use is we take omega here is the quasi-normals for black hole, and we see because the quasi-normals from quantum black hole looks very same as the black holes when you see the mean event, so we just express this mean quasi-normals of the black hole in terms of sum over of all the quasi-normals I introduced in the slides before, which we calculate from quantum black holes. And by doing so, we can actually get an analytical expression for the echoes in our models. And here I show, so basically this blue curve is the GR ring down, and this yellow curve is the GR ring down plus echo. And the and this one is showing from the numerical result, and the Lorentz ring down in the red one is the analytical get from here, and you can see they match pretty well, so which means the analytical and numericals match pretty well. And there's also an interesting signature from the echoes we get is the first 20 echoes decay as the 1 over t, which is this yellow block here, and the subsequent echo decays exponentially. And this is actually because at the beginning there's a lot of quasi-normal modes from our quantum black holes, and when they sum together, they have this 1 over t behavior. But at a later time, most of the quasi-normal modes actually escape from the angular momentum variant, and which leaves very few kinds of the echoes, and they will just follow the single echo decay, which is exponentially decay. And we also like show this in our analytical waveform is here, and we can calculate the behavior of this dropping, and then we find that the transition happened at the 20, around like 19, 20 echoes. So that's why the first 20 echo decay is 1 over t.
I think that's maybe a correction that the damping here happens at the membrane. It doesn't because of the, it's not because of the
Yeah, that's the quasi-normal modes of the quantum black hole.
How different are the quasi-normal modes of the quantum black hole to convert to a black hole?
Very different. So basically, you can see like this the mean event is we only take one most like one mode is the 2-2 mode, and we use that one and we expansion that one in terms of the quasi-normal modes from the quantum black hole. So basically this is only one here for the black holes, and we actually sum over like hundreds for the quantum black hole. And if you want to see explicit form of the quasi-normal modes from the quantum black holes, this is the form of it. And they're pretty different from the black hole solution. But I can try to plot one if you want to see how different it is, but I don't have a plot.
In the review paper with the RD of Shuri and me and Qingwen, I numerically checked the Qingwen's formula for the quasi-normal modes by numerically calculating the quasi-normal modes in the data plots.
Yeah, I think Narutaka has a show this morning about how the quasi-normal modes looks like in our model.
The formula is very consistent with the numerical calculation. Maybe you can check it out in the review.
But I think the main thing is that the classical quasi-normal modes really are about the angular momentum barrier. And then the quantum ones are basically things trapped between the angular momentum barrier and the ball. So they are very different objects.
So basically this is the, and I also like give an idea how our echoes look like in the frequency domain. This is the frequency, and this is the string multiply square root of frequency, which is the unit like we're using. And you can see this blue and the yellow curve is the LIGO noise from Hanford and Livingston. And here this highly oscillating, this one is the LIGO mean event, LIGO template for the very big signal at the beginning. And this oscillating one is our echoes. And here I show only the big echoes, which is the, I showed like two initial conditions, and we have different echo amplitude from these two different initial conditions. And you can see from this outgoing, this echo signal looks very big. And it stand out of noise around 100 hertz to 300 hertz. And it,
that means you should have already detected the signal.
Yeah. So the problem is coming from here, because I use the outgoing, like I, as I mentioned before, the initial condition I use is not very realistic, or say it's actually, we don't know what is initial condition. And I already also show that different initial condition give us very uncertainty of the amplitude. So I will show later if we introduce.
You said this is why you use numerical relativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
this is an analytical result, not the numerical result.
Yeah, this is linear perturbation theory result.
But
so I will.
It's kind of a mixed thing, because we use something from numerical relativity and then something from linear.
But this is linear perturbation. Yeah, this is linear perturbation theory.
Yeah, but then you use LIGO template. You see LIGO
template. Yeah. Yeah, you can see in this sense, but the main idea is.
But it's not real, it's not genuine numerical relativity.
Or
we kind of mix and match, but then exactly how you do it is somewhat arbitrary, right?
I think in that sense, our results are not pure numerical relativity or pure linear perturbation. We're trying to like coming from linear perturbation theory and then adding more nonlinear effect into that and try to leave more reasonable results in this progress. So I will show later, you can see like smaller echo in more realistic setting that I'll show in the later. But here I just give kind of a motivation why we're going from linear perturbation theory to more nonlinear theory. And you can also see the interesting like phenomenon is the biggest amplitude is coming from where the Boltzmann reflectivity reaching a maximum. Basically, here omega equal to zero, which is because they have spin, so at infinity, the frequency for omega equal to zero near horizon is actually 118 hertz, basically here. And and I also calculated the signal to noise ratio for this, just to see how big echo is, if we can detect this. And it seemed like show as the frequency, it's have very big signal, and the peak, the ratio, and here is the this is the SNR signal noise ratio of the echo over the mean event. And this is the effective mass for the final black hole. And this blue curve is for all the echoes, and this yellow one is the first echo, and fifth echo, and 15th echo. And they have a peak around 85 solar mass, which is near to the event I use.
Yeah, I have a question, but you said that the maximum amplitude of the echoes in the frequency domain is at the super inner frequency, right?
Yeah.
But that's kind of puzzles me, and that's something that I ran with Ashrati. In what I have been doing with him, we see that the transfer function that I have, because of the transmission coefficient that appears as an overall factor, the transmission coefficient goes to zero at the super random bound frequency. So you should, I am finding that this suppresses the echoes at this particular frequency.
You mean at the omega equal to zero here?
Can you
here?
Yeah, when that omega is equal to zero. Can you go back to your a few slides where you have the optical approximation? No, the series, yes, that one. So basically, the TPH, the transmissivity, should
you
go
mean
to zero.
This then go to zero as they
approach the super radio bound frequency, because that's by definition is a frequency that is not transmitted to the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be suppressed, in my understanding.
But it goes to infinity. That's the thing.
Sorry,
but in this way, the T black hole is included in each regular.
So, yeah, that's actually what. So basically, the structure we use is we send some wave packet and we see what produce the mean event. So if we need signal for the mean event, then we need if T is very small, T transmission is very small, then we need H in very big to produce the mean event.
So
it's kind of canceled.
This would mean something infinity there. Because TBH goes to zero at that point.
Yeah, it's actually so that's why I say this method is not realistic, because what produced the mean wave for the mean event is actually something from inside. So the realistic condition is combine these two, but right now I just use one of them. So for some region of the frequency, I should use this one, and for another region of frequency, I should use this one. So the infinity comes is basically because I use only one of them. So there's so either one of them have a like an infinity at low frequency, and another one will have infinity at high frequency.
I think infinity is there. If you go to the previous slide. So the TBH does go to zero at the horizon frequency, but then of course if you do see something at horizon, I mean if you look at the LIGO waveform, you see signal at horizon frequency. So that means that if this formula is correct, H in times TBH must be finite. Of course, this could be that this formula is not correct, but that. If you want to use this formula, the TPH does go to zero, but if you actually look at the LIGO wave signal, which will be just the first term there, H in time transistors is finite. So that means that H should go to infinity.
Yeah, I think that's the direct expression, but the mean physics, or mean picture behind this is basically when it goes to zero, this is no transmission from this, but actually there's some wave come from outside which produce the mean effect. So if you have this signal, combine the signal, then you won't have this infinity. So that's also why I say the real situation should somehow between these two, like combine these two. And this also the idea we why we introduced the numerical relativity, trying to introduce it. Does that make sense?
Because you compare the results, that's another.
Yeah.
Good, as soon as possible.
So basically, let's actually go to it looks big echoes, but it could change by the factor of change a lot by the initial conditions, and that's kind of why we're thinking in trying to introduce the more numerical relativity model. So the first model I introduced we call it the hybrid method, and I will briefly introduce what the model we use is. It's basically the Boltzmann reflectivity introduced by a previous paper of Narataka and me and Nash. And this expression is coming from three independent derivation. And one is the fluctuating dissipation theory. And the second one is detailed balance from this picture. If we look at the black hole as a big quantum particles, then the Hawking radiation can be looked as a spontaneous emission. And if we have some ingoing in-situ radiation, then they will produce the echo, which can be looked at as a stimulated emission. And we also have the CP symmetry for the final state of black hole, which has then we can derive this Boltzmann reflectivity. And just a short remind about Narataka introduced about this is exactly what we're using in our hybrid model. And basic idea is we have this wave equation from normal black hole, and as Narataka say that we can introduce this dissipation terms if we have a quantum fluctuation related, then we can actually show the Boltzmann reflectivity. And this is the normal solution which only have the ingoing, and this is the, as Narataka showed, this is like near horizon. If we add this dissipation, then the wave will go to a constant which is dissipated. And another interesting thing is when we're trying to use this model into calculation, we find if we only introduce these terms, it will also lead to the same Boltzmann reflectivity. And all the procedure is just calculates this equation, and then it will give two Bessel equation. And if we choose the decaying solution near the horizon, then we will get the same Boltzmann reflectivity. So I think it can count as like another derivation which leading to the...
So this is what you've done here recently, right?
Yeah, if we remove this.
So what, you remove the derivative?
Yeah.
And remove then you still get the Boltzmann.
Yeah. So basically remove this. Remove this term. So after I introduce this, then I will give a short review like how this hybrid method looks. So just when this hybrid method is basically all the ideas from this picture. So here is the time, and this is R star, which is Tortoise coordinate, and this, and we will separate the space time into two region, and this yellow range is the which we call the interior, which we will use the post Newtonian theory into this region, and this region basically contain two black hole inspire, and then this outside we call it external, which we will still use the black hole perturbation, and here this red curve, here's red one is the potential, effective potential area, and we can see that from this plot, we can see here from A to small e, which produced the inspire, and then from E to F and G, it will plot merger, and then it will follow with the ring down. So for this region, we will have this post-Newtonian expression, which will treat inspire, and then we will have this linear still apply. So that's why it's called Hebbrey method. We encoding the two black hole in the interior region, but the outside we still use the linear perturbation theory. And this method has been successfully using into the the GR case, the standard black hole case. And here I show a handing on collection with the transverse anti-parallel spins. And here this the plot is the psi for the psi 2-2 mode for the even parallelity, which is the Rayleigh equation. And then this is T. And the blue curve is the waveform from the hybrid method. And this dark one is black one is the numerical reactivity. It's the exact waveform from numerical reactivity. And this show agreement between these two. And also they also in their paper they also calculate radial energy and momentum is also matched pretty well. So now we're trying to apply this model with our Boltzmann reflectivity or emergent gravity model. And what we do is instead of the waveform, we're adding this damping term. And in this model, the time delay of the echo is related to gamma. And here I show a plot about if we add the damping term into the models, then we'll have exactly the same waveform as shown in the GR, but we will have here very small echoes. So which the blue one and the orange one, I have a zooming plot here, and they are different gamma. So when we change the gamma, it's actually changed the time delay. So that's why they have like different time delay, and but they have the similar like waveform.
I think that formula should be different because you should have the derivative. So I think then there should be another omega somewhere in that log. I mean, the dimension of your gamma is different from the dimension of the gamma
used. No, the gamma.
It should be gamma divided by omega squared or something. But I mean, it's probably inside the log, it doesn't make too much of a difference. But still, it could be.
Yeah, I'll check.
The panels should be different. That's just the dimension of gamma. Okay. Gamma has dimension of frequency squared now.
Yeah.
And what's the motivation to draw the second derivative?
At the very beginning, it's actually just for easy to coding. Don't change the characteristics. And also like Yanbei and discuss with them why like we put the second second derivative here. And I see like we actually didn't try remove it. So I would just check and we so I think okay I would just try and see if this one what will if we drop this. What will lead to, and like surprisingly, it will give the same reflectivity. So I was thinking, okay, that's interesting, and also it will give the similar echo if in that case, and so that's why we dropped that. And I will also introduce the because the realistic is not hanging on case, so I will also introduce the inspiral case, and here. As the example of the equal mass inspiring black hole boundaries, and this is the trajectory of where we separate these two region, And this blue dashed line is the in the most stable circular orbit, and this one is the light ring. And if we apply the waveform, this is like the expression coming from the effective coming from the post-Newtonian. And if we post this into the linear perturbation theory, then we can get this Hebron method waveform. This is the real of the R multiply 2-2 mode over M, and here is the time. And you can see the orange one is the hybrid method, and the black one is numerical reactivity. And they're match pretty good in the phase for especially it's like for the in spiral, but the amplitude actually looks a little bit less well. And also like the ring down is actually a little bit not pretty well. It's basically because they for the ring down, right now what we use is the spin zero black holes, and then at the end it would be like and outside it would be like Schwarzschild space time. But for the real numerical relativity and the real case is actually like spin 0.7 around, so that's why it doesn't match at a later time.
Do you have a hint on why the amplitudes are not matching?
The amplitude.
I would assume that for similar reason near the ring down, like the merger phase would be different as well, because you are distorting the space-time there. But in the spiral phase, I would assume that they would be quite similar.
And they are in the spiral phase, similar, right?
Yeah, the phase is pretty good.
Both amplitude and phase in the spiral are the same, are similar, right? As you approach the merger, then they get worse. It's not an exact method. I mean, so that's why you don't expect it to work very well.
So, yeah, I'm not very sure why, but they're like matched. Like compared to later, here is actually, as Nash mentioned, is actually okay. But I think the most important, like next step we're trying to do is at least trying to match the ring down by introduce the curl into our method. But that's a like a current ongoing project. And in the same way, I introduced the damping into it, and you can see there's like same waveform but follow with the later echoes. And here I have two different parameter setting, and because the alpha here is the alpha is the I changed the is I adding alpha here. And the reason I do this just to visualize the echo, because if we do not put the alpha there, then it will be very small. So this one is the echo if we increase the alpha, but the real echo in our model is, this is the same plot but zoom in. So the real echo is actually here for our model. And I have another plot to get rid of this. So this is the echoes for our parameter, the Boisman reflectivity. But it looks
how much are they compared with the main events?
At around 1/400. 500.
For alpha one quarter.
Alpha 1/4 is basically the Boisman reflectivity.
1/4 is Boisman.
One is increased one.
Okay, and then so for alpha one, then what is the
alpha one is this one.
I don't see the main event here.
It's this one.
Okay. Here is like one.
But this is not what we're looking for. Like 1/4 is what we are looking for. So it's 1/5.
I mean, this is like this TQS that I talk about introducing that people use. He's also changing the Boltzmann.
Mm.
It looks like the Boltzmann itself is very small. Yeah.
So it kind of agree with
I guess
what I'm finding.
Yeah, that's
what I'm trying to say.
Mm.
So you can see they're very small echo, and also it's more consistent with the inside initial condition.
The outside condition.
Yeah, the outside initial condition. And
sorry, why are you saying that? Just for the amplitudes?
Yeah, just for the amplitudes. So I think the more realistic, like it's basically more wave coming from the outside rather than the inside, I think, in that sense.
I think you want a little bit of both.
Yeah, of course. So if we, so this is kind of the more, like one step further, we introduce more linear, no linear dynamic from the post-Newton approximation, and it shows like the echoes is more like smaller than we expect in the inside the initial condition. And another method I will introduce is the effective one-body formulation, and basically this formulation is saying if you give the high order results of the post-Newtonian approximation, and if you give the results from numerical reactivity, then you can produce the waveform from the LIGO. And they have already analyzed the INSPIRE upgrades within 0.001 cycles, and later INSPIRE plunge bring down upgrade with the 0.00 gravitational wave cycle. So it's kind of a promising.
Sorry, what do you mean by these units? I don't get.
I think this is one cycle.
Yeah, but what do you mean with agree within these many cycles?
So basically the move like the difference
you see a different phase if you evolve for a thousand cycles, something like that.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, compare with the exactly numerical results. Compare this effective one body formulation. And I will only show plot from the Schwarzschild case, which we take the Zarelli waveform and we adding a source outside, adding a source in the left hand side of wave equation, and we calculate the radial plunge case, which is the hand-on case. This plot is from Bao-Yi, and he has the code doing all the effective on-body formulation, and we apply the same model as I apply for the hybrid method. And then you can see there's a small echo here. And if you and this dashed line is a little bit different from this blue curve. And if you like change the parameter, you might say, well, there's echo here. Because here I think it's too close to the mean event, so it's a little bit hard to say.
Yeah.
But here is more.
Difference or something.
Yeah, but I just quick show like when you change the path like gamma, it will like have different time delay.
Sorry, what is the initial condition that you're using there? It's a orbital motion or?
It's hand. This is not. It's radial plunge.
Head-on
collision. It's not inspired.
What is happening in early times?
I think it's just the. You mean here or here?
Yeah, between -30 and -20. I thought that head-on collision, you would just see a Gaussian package somehow.
I think it's maybe just the accuracy.
No, but you do see a very quite a normal model as well, right?
I think he's mentioned this oscillating.
Even before.
There is this. Yeah.
I think it's from some cut or some accuracy, like from.
Might be the initial condition.
So I think, yeah, maybe like there's a shortcut at the initial time or something. But I didn't check with him.
And why it's all positive?
Why it's...
It's absolute value.
Oh, it's absolute value. Okay.
And so we can see that like there's small echoes and also small echo from Hebron method and also from Lewis talks, we see the small echo. And it seems
already got cited.
And then I will introduce like what we do with Einstein toolkit. This is the job done with Eric. And what we're trying to do is the modification is from the fastball paradigm, which accounting for the microstate of the black hole. And here the picture A is the standard black hole. We have a long throw and horizon, and region around horizon is vacuum, and we have a singularity inside the horizon. And but the plot B here is the fastball plot, and here we have also from the infinity, it looks exactly like a black hole, but when we go close to the would be horizon, which is r equal to 2m, there's no longer a vacuum. There's actually all the space-time and a little bit inside the would be horizon. And here different curve is showing different microstates. And one microstate is one space microspace time in this picture. So if we add them together, it would be that's why it cut fast. It would be like a lot of fast matter around it, and it's no longer a vacuum. And so that's why it's called the fastball. And here I show a simple like a 4D space time in the fastball. They reduce from the higher dimension. And I try to calculate the behave of it at infinity, and you can see at infinity this fastball is exactly looks like a black hole. And but if you go to near horizon, here I have a plot near horizon, and this is the dashed blue one is the density, and then this is like pressure. Pressure one, pressure two, and pressure three, which like you can see here, they are anisotropic, and the matter. So this anisotropic behavior is very critical for the horizonless geometry because we also see this behavior in the ether holes Nash have proposed before, and but. Because there's no general 4D fastball structure, the one I just show you is just one sample micro space time. But there's like hundreds, thousands of them, which do not have the space time to capture the how it looks like. So that's why we're thinking this mock fastball models, which we're trying to capture the critical behavior here. One is horizonless. What we do is we take the Schwarzschild metric at r equal bigger than 2m, and we add a small positive a here. So and then at r equal to 2m, we put a mirror there, and everything is mirrored from this side to this side. So now and now because this positive a, there's no horizon, and we also calculate the matter field from this. Space-time, and you can see they have anisotropic pressure, and the tangential pressure is much bigger than the radial pressure. And what we are trying to do is
we're in the process of doing.
Yeah, we're in the process of doing this. So basically, the idea is we take this. Matter field, and we are trying in adding this into the like the Einstein toolkit and perform the 4D numerical.
What is looking to this metric? What is the difference between this that you are proposing and the wormhole? Because it seems that you can have you can this is to me, it's similar to a wormhole where you just cut the space-time and you glue together a copy. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So basically, actually, after we write this, we find there's a like a wormhole solution. I think exactly the same as what we.
So Dawkin and who was that? There are two people who.
Yeah, I
think.
Yeah, they do.
There is no actual wormhole. I mean, this is a, I mean, toy model, and they have a toy model.
Why is it not a wormhole?
I mean, wormhole is kind of a. That depends on what you call wormhole. I think this is not a solution to anything. So it's just
you add a lot of strange kind of matter, and then you have two space times that you glue together, and you can go between them. So
that's right. Yeah. But the thing is, if you kind of cook something up, it's not a solution to something, right? And I mean, they cook it up very quickly. So
yeah,
happen to cook up the same thing.
So I would give a short introduction about what Einstein's Toolkit is. It's an open source for numerical relativity, and it's based on the Cartesian framework, and they have already successfully produced this biggest event, which I was using before, and the cost for produce this waveform here is like around 8,000 core hours, and they produce this pretty good two modes of the gravitational wave string, and so what we are trying to do with the Einstein Toolkit is we are trying to put this matter of view. We're in progress in doing.
Thank you.
So what the idea is, instead of horizon, we have, instead of the black hole with the horizon, we actually have a black hole with something outside, some matter field outside it, and we will set the outside matter as this one, and this is like the static expression, but we express this in terms of the expansion. Then we can like say at a pan horizon with zero expansion, and then we find another constant expansion surface a little bit outside, and then we can put this matter field into it, and then we can evolve along with the expansion rate. So that's basically keep the matter a little bit outside this horizon, and then but still near the horizon. And we're trying to write a new song about, we call it ecology, and we put it into the initial data, and then we evolve the Einstein Toolkit. But right now we're kind of still trying to detect the stability of a single black hole, which evolves to some noun, which I haven't figured out why, but we hope at the end we can use this expression and do the numerical relativity and see how echo it looks like in this picture. And that's basically all. And just some outlook about what I'm trying to do now. First one, we're actually thinking if we could do Einstein Toolkit with other modified gravity action. And the basic idea is if we have some action, can we like evolve, like modify gravity action, can we evolve it evolve it without the modification and get the GR waveform, and then we add the first order perturbation into from the action, and then run a first order modification and adding that first order matter field, which could be like more general way to generate this numerical relativity. It's just a guess, but we haven't do it. And another thinking is about analog gravity, which actually like Eric Onglu has this paper claim that for the analog gravity, the Hawking radiations can produce without the transplanarian physics. But for what we are thinking is like if we go like go ahead of the time, we will still reach this transplanarian region, and if we like analyze the microphysics around there, which evolve the viscosity, can we actually have the same like damping model as the one we Nair-Takin Nash have, and by like change the viscosity of it, and including the microphysics, including the transparent region, can we produce the same echo in this analog gravity? And another thing is we are trying to do the effective one-body formalism for curve case, but we're running into a problem because we have two ways of doing it. One is modify the Einstein field equation with the extra Stampington, which is what we did before. But there's two problems related to this. One is if we use the Sasaki Nakamura equation, then the source term we need to, because this integral twice about the Tarkovsky equation, then so we need to decide what is the integral constant is for the case. And for the standard black hole, the way they're trying to decide the constant is a little bit tricky, which might not be applicable to our models, but so we are still trying. And the for the Tarkovsky equation, it actually needs regularization. And Eric Song has this specific way to do this for the black hole case. And we're trying to use the way in the black hole case, but this two net equation gives different ingoing energy near horizon. So it's like still like trying. And another thing is we if we apply the Boltzmann reflectivity directly there, then as I said before, the ingoing energy for these two equations is not the same. So we are thinking maybe it's related to the because we are doing the source term, then source term have the like a self energy, and it's kind of hard to like separate the source energy with the gravitational wave. And you can see there's actually a paper like express this this one is near horizon, this one is at infinity. And there's a singular terms, this one, this term, and this term looks the same, similar, and but this term is a singular term. So we're thinking if we could remove this term and then do all the stuff, if we could find it would be like more easy to separate the self energy by doing this, but this is still in progress. And another thing we're thinking is how to extend this Haber model to Kerr case, because it gives the wrong wind down. And it's hard in the, as I mentioned, this because we use Schwarzschild rather than Kerr at the end. But it's hard to change the Kerr because the data here we post is at the space-time domain from the post-Newtonian. But the Tarkovsky and Sasaki Nakamura are all in frequency domain. So the first idea we're thinking just modify potential to get the right ring down. But it's kind of a little bit like cheeky, but I didn't find any other better way to do it. So it's still like in progress. I think I'm better to end here. I also have some like discuss in the morning with the like in the Nair-Takin case, like how we related viscosity to the membrane paradigms. And if we have this Boltzmann reflectivity, the viscosity no longer be this constant, but have this frequency dependent. And basically that's all. Thank you.
Question. Can you go back to this slide that you said about the regularization scheme? So basically you are running the same problem that I found about the near horizon energy that I mentioned, and that's why I use the approximation regime. But I don't get it why you are saying the Sasaki Nakamura need this integration constant. As I was talking to you, there is a way of relating the Sasaki Nakamura.
So I think the difference we're using, like you are actually using that expression related to the mode near horizon to the infinity. And at the beginning, I don't know that expression, maybe that actually solved the problem. But before using that expression, we actually need to determine the integral constant for the solution. That's why I say I put it here.
Yeah, because with that you can relate it with just the derivatives. You don't run into this problem with the integration of.
Yeah. But at the beginning, we do not have that approximation expression for the stuff related at infinity and at the horizon. That's why I say we need to.
Well, that's not an approximation, right? That relation that I showed you with the derivatives, that relation.
No. I mean the one you are using to relate it near horizon kappa to the infinity.
No, I'm just relating to the first comment there. This assignment.
Yeah. I know. So I mean, if you do not use that expression, which related to the near horizon waveform to the infinite horizon waveform, then you need to decide the integral constant for the source term. But
no, even if you don't use, what I mean is that there is a way.
Mm.
I get that the Sasaki Nakamura should be, there is an integral between the two, but you can also write them as derivatives of each other. As I showed in the paper, there is
If you transfer from the Tarkovsky, the source term, if you transfer from Tarkovsky to Sasaki Nakamura, you need to integrate.
The full solution with the source term, you can just relate it.
This is, I think, maybe just
too tech. Maybe I can
this. Maybe this is like a landing point, but yeah, I guess you guys need to talk to each other.
We can talk later.
But you kind of mean that there is no integration constant. It's ambiguous.
There is a paper by Sasaki Nakamura that relates the inhomogeneous solutions just by taking basically derivatives of the Sasaki Nakamura. Quantities.
Wow. So then I think that's the thing that needs to be decided. And I think maybe Bob was also working on it, so maybe the three of you guys should figure this out. But any other comments or questions? Or
so you and others are throwing very tiny echoes, so why are you still interested in echoes?
I think that's the other way around, because we're interested in echoes, then we're trying to produce. This is what, whether it's small or big, is just what theory gives.
Well, if it's small, we'll never see them. So why is it interesting?
It's too small, we'll never see it?
Well, that's the first thing that I said about gravitational waves in the first
time. Yeah, I guess that's
it. Tomorrow, I'm showing the opposite. I'm showing
bigger. Oh, okay.
But you see, she had very big echoes at first, right? So you kind of keep switching back and forth. It began as small. So probably the real thing is somewhere in between that. It's not a too big one.
That's not how it goes.
No, that's not like historically,
how it goes? You make one prediction that is too large, the next prediction is too small, that would somehow
converge. Like for most of the history of the 20th century, people were discussing it, arguing about Hubble constant being like between 50 and 100, and it turned out to be 70, which is half everything. So there's an argument that it's the largest agreement in the geometric community is where the
actually. Well, but the thing with the small echoes is that kind of agree with my interpretation of the potential barrier of the Kerr black hole itself already filtering what passed inside to the black hole to be repacked at the first time. So there is a cutting at the spiridium ball frequency there. And if you're using Boltzmann reflectivity, that's where the peak of the reflectivity is. So that's why it's small echoes. Maybe it's a constant reflectivity. That's not going to happen because you're just cutting any particular frequency, but in the Boltzmann reflectivity, that's a preferred frequency.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is this frequency parameter which you call alpha and then Natasha calls DQH. And then depending on what amplitude you detect or don't detect the echoes, that's, I guess, put the constraint on that parameter, right? So if you make that big enough, then you can get bigger echoes. That's an option. You can get like for this alpha this one, you can get a quark 10% amplitude, right?
Yeah, if you change your parameter, you can get a big echo.
But I mean, Bob, you don't actually predict how big of an echo because you cannot actually connect to the initial nonlinear initial condition. So the main challenge is really connected to the nonlinear initial condition.
I can connect to what I think I'm seeing. So then I can get the implied amplitude
of the echoes.
Yeah.
But then you don't, I mean, of course, if you see it, they say that's where it is. But then what is the prediction for it based on, I mean, some model?
Yeah, well, my model doesn't have this Boltzmann factor.
Right.
And then I think that's the real reason why it's a big difference.
But you're also using some kind of artificial initial conditions, right? You don't have orbital motion to see.
Well, I observe my initial conditions are such that they're finite flux or finite energy, whereas it's not clear that these others are.
This, like, the effective one body matter, we don't find a good way to, like, say the energy, but for the hyper matter, it's fine, all finite. There's no singularity.
Yeah, like you, I'm also concentrating on the perturbation on the inside. And then there's a zero at what I call a negative zero, which we were, there's discussion on that. But if you don't get a zero, that means there's some infinite energy density somewhere.
Yeah,
so that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to at least be consistent with that.
But infinite amplitude, I don't know if it's infinite, but you have to integrate over frequency to get energy. That I don't know.
So, the flux density is quite, it's just simply related to amplitude squared.
I don't think I say it's infinite energy density because this is the frequency inside the horizon is like is zero, this at super radiance limit. So the amplitude goes to infinity, but the frequency goes to zero, the horizon frame frequency. So I think the energy is finite. And what comes out is also finite. It's just that there's a, I mean, if you plug.
There's some expression for the flux density, which is because mega not factor so it's saying that,
but that's not infinity.
That's the flux density at that particular frequency. It should be zero. I don't think there's any natural way to get a non-zero flux at that frequency.
Okay, so
but if you do not use that approximation, if you use like say Haber method, it doesn't ever show like it doesn't really matter if you do not use that approximation. Like if you say use this more realistic setting, there's nothing related to that picture. It's kind of one reason why we go from the linear perturbation theory to more numerical setting.
I think that basically the main thing is that there is ambiguity about how you want to set up the initial conditions, and there are different ways of doing it. And until you actually do a proper job of it, there would be that ambiguity. I guess between the, I guess four of us, we have like four or five different ways of doing it. And and Chingwen already has showed us one method that gives us 2 gig of an echo and another one that gives a very small echo or something. Okay, so any other questions, concerns? Yeah.
Just remind me, the big echoes, you also use the Boltzmann reflectivity?
Yeah.
So again, what is the difference?
With the extra
No, you are using two different methods, and the two different methods, one give a large echo and one give a small echo, is that right?
In the same way, from inside world.
There's actually, there's linear perturbation theory, which have two initial conditions, which give one big echo, one small echo, and there's hyperisk method, which, can give small or big echo depending on which prefactor you use for the Boltzmann reflectivity. And also, the effective one body formulas
it's a different method, but I think it's the result is same to the hybrid method. It needs small echo for if we do not introduce any factor before the voice reflectivity. If you introduce that one, then you can always generate bigger echoes.
I see.
Okay. There are no other questions or concerns. Let's thank Jingwen again.